welcome along to the Watch Along Suspicion Edition, episode 5. Backstory. Here I am. Here's what happened. Just had an audition. Little Zoomy meeting of, I don't know, a part in this thing. Anyway, the character is this, like, kind of cool girl. Anyway, so this, for me, is what cool girls look like. I don't know. I tried to do more heavy makeup, but I don't know if it... Now I'm looking at myself in this camera and doesn't really look like I've got much on at all. It's really just seeped into my skin with the nerves of auditioning. Anyway, we enjoy the nerves. We love them. All to say, they were scheduled very closely together. Scheduled this watch along with the most incredible people, Stefan Schwartz and Darren McLeod. Stefan directed episode 5 and 50% of the whole show, and Darren is the big main man producer who produced the series. And you know, we booked this in ages ago, and then this meeting came through. Maggie. Anyway, all to say, the reason the lighting might not lighten brilliant. Maggie, stop. The reason the lighting might not be very good, and that I've just sort of put you down on the countertop, and that I've already made coffee and drunk most of it, although I am going to have a little bit more now, is because of this tight schedule we're running on today. So I just did my audition. I don't really have time to change, so unfortunately we're all in black, but I do have slippers on. See, here's the ripped jeans. This is like, you know, the rocker girl. Thinking about it now, my audition was from here up, so... I'll never know that I had rips in my jeans. Anyway, so this episode was written by Nick Leather. It is called What Does a Kidnapper Look Like? Which is a line from the show. And we're going to get on with it. It's one of my most favourite episodes. Oh, what should the mark be? Well, we're going with this one. It's what you call a bottle episode. It was the first one that we did coming back post-COVID break. So... it's very interesting on many levels, but that's why I really wanted to get Darren on, because he was kind of the architect of our COVID protocols, along with obviously a huge team of people, but he was the leader of it all, and he is just so brilliant and amazing, and I really wanted to get him on for this episode. And then Stefan directed the episode, and I just think it's so wonderfully directed, and bottle episodes, I think, just as a director allow you, you know, you're so restrained. Oh, brilliant. That's that coming in. He's on the phone. It's all going off. Anyway, time to say welcome to this episode of the Watch Along Suspicion Edition. Suspicion Edition, episode 5. We gotta go. We gotta get on the Zoom. See you on the Zoom. Everybody, welcome along to the Watch Along Suspicion Edition, episode 5, titled What Does a Kidnapper Look Like? That was written by Nick Leather and directed by Stefan Schwartz, who is here, and also, obviously, produced the whole season, the whole series produced by Darren. How are you both?
Really good.
Okay, great. We're lovely. From all corners of the world right now, so this is actually a very international Zoom call. Stefan, you can press play now. We're gonna count down. We've been poised over it. Ready? 3, 2, 1, play. So for people watching along with us, we skipped the recap. We skipped the trailer and we skipped the recap. And I'm turning my sound down. Okay, perfect. Oh, it's always such a relief when you press play and it's all going. We're recording. Perfect. So when we got to this episode in our filming, just to give a bit of backstory, which we've kind of mentioned on different watch-alongs of this, but this was the first episode back post-pandemic lockdown, shutdown. So this is the one that we decided to, I say we, like you, Darren, I'm assuming, decided that we would start with this. So can you take us through... Oh my gosh, wait, sorry. This is another thing that I always do, is when something cool is on screen, we should feel free to talk about it. And this particular car shot, Stefan, remember, like, how did you do that? Did you almost kill us in real life?
It was always very, very safe. Everything was fine. Everything was good. Actually, funnily enough, it was done in a bunch of different parts. One with in a studio. These shots that you're seeing now were in a studio with just flashing lights going past as if we were driving. Then real people, stunt people on a racetrack at a place up in North London, whose name I've forgotten now. Darren will remember.
Oh, yeah. Remember, they were doing all those cars at the same time.
It's a top secret testing ground that we get.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, so it's lucky I didn't remember the name. and then also doing a bit with you guys actually in the car, driving past and opening doors at inopportune moments. So, and then just piecing it all together to try and make it feel like it's all one piece.
Oh my gosh, sounds so simple. Easy.
So going back to what you were saying about, basically we've been shut down for COVID, and stop me if I'm wrong, Darren, and we were looking for an episode where we didn't have any extra people, so there wasn't a COVID risk. We wanted a bubble, a shoot that was sort of in a bubble, and this shoot was totally contained with all of you guys, the main cast. And we didn't have to shoot anything else apart from the top and the tail.
Literally, the only other actor in it doesn't even make it through the front door. So,
So, Darren, when you were looking at, okay, so how do we get back going again? You know, because obviously we shut down as the world did. And then
we had filmed 4 weeks. So we filmed half of episode one and most of episode two, and then everything paused for about six, seven months. And we decided to come back, and we wanted to start somewhere that was very much in our control, very much contained, that had as few variables as possible. And so what we decided was to start with this, because it was just our principal cast. It was you guys. And so Stefan very graciously agreed to do so. Worked well. So we slowly unwrapped the onion as we came back out. You know, we then moved into bigger studio spaces with extras, and then back out onto the streets of London and New York afterwards.
Yeah. And it's also in the industry, we call it a bottle episode, because because it's all in one bottle. Everything is contained within a particular location. So it meant everyone could stay nearby, everyone wasn't mixing with other people. It's the perfect episode. But also, bottle episodes are really tricky to shoot because you're in one location, and because you're all contained, it means there's not big action sequences, there's not big, location-wise, you're not really showing anything new. So really, you turn to performance in a bottle episode, and it becomes all about how the actors are working together. And with five actors, it's a directing nightmare because of eye lines. And anyone who's directed knows that with five people, all in the same scene, all the time, you're going to go, which side of the line am I going to put who on? And how many different angles do I have to cover to make it work so that someone actually looks at someone else? So.
Yeah, because you have so to break that down a bit, you're going, well, first you're going, is this protocol going to work? Like, I feel like production gave everybody the best shot to go, right, here's an episode that we could try coming back with all the new protocols that you guys so carefully put in place. So that's one thing. But then the second thing is, like you say, Stefan, like, how do I shoot this so that it's interesting? And then how do I shoot it so that the shots actually, that it's not only interesting, but makes sense, that the right person is responding? And we would shoot, so like the scenes when we're kind of looking around, I feel like that was a day, right? And then later on we have the scene in the kitchen, and that was a whole day. What was your strategy to making it look? Because it's one of my favorite episodes, which is why I'm so happy that you're here.
Script-wise, it's always been one of my favorites. I always thought it was Afraid of Virginia Woolf, because it's like an overnight thing of half-truths and, who is telling the truth.
Lots of reveals. Yeah.
Ton of reveals. So what was your approach, Stefan, to make it? Like, how did you make it as good as it is?
So the wonderful thing was, because we were coming out of COVID, normally when you're shooting TV, you don't really have any time to rehearse the actors. But we had the glorious luxury, because we were coming out of COVID, of having a week down at the house, I think probably 3 days in the end, 3 or 4 days, to actually work through the scenes, rehearse them so that every, you know, and we were introducing a new character who no one had met, you know, Tom, no one had met. So, and also it was funny because none of the actors had really met the other actors. I mean, maybe you just crossed paths, but you hadn't really hung out with them at all because all your storylines were so separate. So it was a chance for everyone to meet, everyone to click and figure out who they all were, a chance for us to figure out blocking of scenes, which was 5 people, to keep it interesting and not too static. You're all the time trying to figure out what's the dynamic, whose side is someone on, who are they not believing, who's higher status standing up, who's lowest, you know, whatever it happens to be. We're looking for shapes and blocking, and all of us had a chance to meet each other, you know, test each other, come up with ideas for scenes, come up with ways of approaching scenes in a lovely, safe environment, actually in the location. And I think we found a lot of interesting things that we might not otherwise have found had we been just shoved there day of and told, okay, well, you're standing there and you're going there. Whereas I felt like organically we found the scenes, which was a real pleasure.
Yeah, because I'd forgotten about that rehearsal. Those rehearsals were amazing because it also let us get out all the mostly the annoying kind of, oh my gosh, we're all here together and let's play and, you know, just mess around. But, you know, and then it gave us a chance because with the new protocols they've put in place for COVID, as an actor, you can't hang around as much and kind of figure things out as they're lighting. You have to come in knowing, right? Because there's just not as much time somehow.
Every time you guys come in, somebody else has to go out, you know what I mean? Like half of most of the technicians then have to leave the room. So it's not like, hey, let's try this and then I'll step away. And like that whole side of it is a lot more arduous now than before.
Yeah. And did you have this location already? Was this always going to be the farmhouse location?
It was on the cards in the couple of days before lockdown, basically.
Right.
But
there were some other ones that we looked at as well. It wasn't the sole contender. And it was a odd situation where it sort of in the middle of, felt like it was in the middle of nowhere, but was actually just in Watford.
Yeah.
And we had a near disaster where we had a kind of miscommunication with design, where it came as a multicolored Dr. Seuss house, and then with a weekend to go, it was all repainted back to different colors. So it was kind of scary times.
Yeah, because it was all painted very dark, wasn't it? It was really I feel like we all got design inspiration from just being in there and enjoying it and having the, you know, candle lights and stuff. This moment with Natalie and Sean, how kind of important was it for you to, you know, because we see the violence of Sean, but then we also maybe for the first time see him show some remorse, you know, he doesn't kind of injure her. And was this an important moment character wise for Sean?
I think it was, you know, for me, this episode was a lot of, you know, we sort of humanized him because he was sort of, you know, as well as him feeling like we didn't quite follow him and he still had a mystery, we also felt like he was taking control, but being honest. And, you know, up until that point, he'd barely said 10 words, whereas now suddenly we're seeing into him. You know, yes, we'd seen him with his dad and that gave us a little bit of insight. But apart from that, he was sort of cold, hard killer. Yeah. Whereas now we were starting to get into his psychology a bit more. He's trying to figure out, because he's also being played as well at this point. So, what he needs is he needs to keep everyone calm, alive, and communicative And so in those moments, what I wanted to suggest was he's a cold, hard killer who may kill her, but that's not his intention at all. His intention is keep them absolutely cut off from any kind of outside environment and then interview them or grill them or find out what he can in order to see if, one, if any of them are involved, and two, if he can find out why he's, you know, being caught up in this, what's happening to him.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant sort of dance with how much truth are you as a director going to reveal, how many kind of Easter eggs are you putting in there, and then how much do we want the mystery and make it look visually interesting and cool in that way. And it kind of, it reminds me a bit of the opening credits of the show, where it's like we see these characters, we see the images, we don't really, you know, with you saying Sean doesn't really say very many words up until this point. Darren, I know that's kind of you, right? The opening credits of Suspicion with the music and the, like, I don't know what you would call it, like the...
Yeah, well,
how do you approach that?
We kind of went out to a few people, but actually it in this instance, it actually partly came from the marketing shoot that we did with Apple when we were in the States. And talking with them about some of the ways that they wanted to approach marketing from their side. And we kind of adjusted the opening credits, which were a bit more sort of like a House of Mirrors kind of vibe originally. And then after looking at some of the stuff that they wanted to do, I kind of spoke to them about finding a balance that would blend the two. So we went with this sort of darker, sort of reflective palette of sort of unknown, mysterious type spaces that did relate to the story without giving too much away. And that's always the tricky bit if you're pulling stuff from inside the show, is you want to show stuff that's interesting, but you can't give the game away because you've got them out there from day one. So that's kind of where it went from. We worked with a brilliant studio called Territory, who also did a bunch of our the NCA, like, maps and overlays and motion graphics.
Oh,
they did our
cool.
titles for us as well. So they built a lot of the digital world of Suspicion.
That's interesting. Then you do that at the end. So you wait for the opening, what do you call that? Like the opening sequence of a show, like the
opening credits.
Credits. Brilliant. Yep. Where the names come up, the credits. Do you have any
sorry,
say?
Just,
that?
Just putting you to this scene, which was like a huge scene of you guys around the table, which seemed to go on forever on the page. And I was dreading shooting it, but then actually really came to life when you guys got a hold of it. And, you know, you start to see each of the characters sort of come forward and reveal little bits and pieces. And yeah, it felt like we were in the kitchen forever. But in fact, I think you sort of get sucked along in everyone as they start to reveal themselves and their ups and downs.
Totally.
Sorry, so going back to credits.
No. It felt, it was such a thrill as an actor to be in a scene like this, because, you know, you come to learn something like that and you go, oh my gosh, we have how many pages and how am I going to remember when my line comes in? And then you get around that table with everybody, especially in the rehearsal, and every person kind of gets their moment of questioning, of being in the spotlight. And it felt very tense when we were doing it, and it was candlelight and, you know, it was potentially, you know, could have been romantic, but it wasn't. It was like very intense. And then we end with Eddie collapsing, and, you know, we're then left with potentially more questions than not. And this is a lovely scene, seeing Eddie lying on the table. And then now we're with Georgina in the corridor. I mean, or Natalie, who's played by Georgina. She's one of the most emotionally present actors I've ever been opposite. How was it to direct such, you know, intense scenes?
It was a nightmare. She didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
She was laughing
so
the whole time. I just didn't know quite what to do. This scene, I'd shout cut and she'd be in hysterical laughter. No, sure. She was, it was lovely. You always kind of dream as a director that you can give a note and that the note is a broad stroke and that the actor will take it and make it a fine, beautiful brush stroke. Oh, sorry, that's my coffee. Louis here is making some lovely coffee.
Oh, we need coffee always.
Yeah, no, okay.
That's part of the life of set, right? Like where the coffee is. Yeah. The strong coffee, the better.
Yeah. So I wait for this to coffee.
Yeah.
Are we close to being done?
Maybe, the thing maybe is, I'll once cold, you press go milk. On the coffee machine, that's
milk.
It.
That's fine.
Oh, Stefan. See, you're just still a man of the people.
Yes, so with her, you sort of give a small note and then she just takes it into it and makes a beautiful symphony of it.
Yeah.
So that's all on her.
Yeah. She is incredible.
You just give her the space. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's about knowing, that's what I love about, you know, you can have a scene that's hyper emotional and, you know, you hope the actor's going to bring it on the day. But as a producing, directing team and duo is like, you have to then, you know, as a director, you have to know like, okay, so here's what I kind of want. But then you have to know, I'm assuming, the parameters of like, well, Darren said I have this much time to do it and I want that corridor, but is it the right shade of blue? And where do I get the, you know, so how much, I guess, do you work? Like for you, Darren, how much do you work with the director and say, right, like, how do you schedule it? How did you schedule this episode? How do you approach kind of how many days and, like, you know, what people's logistics are?
Yeah, I mean, I think this one we gave a bit more time to because A, we were in a confined space. B, we're in new circumstances for everybody. So we had to allow a chance for everyone to figure out how it worked. And I do think that, the rehearsal period was invaluable in making sure that everyone went in there with a clear vision, both, you know, directors and actors, but also the technicians knowing where stuff needed to be, when it needed to be there, because filming these places is always horrific. Because when you look at this frame, there's still a bunch of gear on the other side of that camera and people and cables and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So it's like, if it's a real house, it's that much trickier. It's not like a studio where there's, you just bash a hole in the wall and go, okay, everyone's on the other side of that wall. It's like, no. So it is sort of experience and then discussions and planning. With our, you know, between myself and Stefan, the first AD, and Gavin, the DOP, lots and lots of discussions about what's going to happen when and how.
And do you go, like, does that kind of... Do you do the pros and cons of what if we built
this set? Sorry, that dog is brilliant, by the way.
Dog. We were so excited to have a dog on set. Always the best, but then they're like, you know, they're working, so you can't often pet them. But that dog was very sweet. Was it just did you audition the dog?
Yeah,
We did actually.
Did you?
Because I had to jump up on the window.
We sent one back. They showed us one. And we were like, that dog's not going to cut it for us. We need something that's a bit more...
that scary.
Look a bit more angry and scary. It was lovely, though, actually, and true.
Happens to the best.
He's really just saying hi. But
Is it difficult working with dogs, Stefan?
It most of the time, I'd say 90% of the time, they don't do what you want them to do. I remember doing a scene in Chicago in a park, and all I wanted the dog to do was, and it was a lab, I just had to chase after a ball and bring it back. So I thought, Labrador does not know? And this dog could not. Either it wouldn't run after the ball, or it'd run and grab it and then run off. It just wouldn't run and come back. So it was sort of, actually, this scene with the dog was amazing. It did everything. It looked up. It sort of looked around. I was going, God, I can shoot the whole scene just on his face. I don't need you by the door. I don't need the nosy neighbor. It just all plays on the dog.
I do remember sadly, coming back. Sadly, I wasn't allowed to do that. My God, the dog can hit the mark, but the cat is bloody atrocious.
I mean, I feel like at this point in the episode, you would be forgiven for thinking that, Stefan, because, I mean, it's always lovely as an actor when you get on with the other castmates, and we all got on very well, which I think sometimes the more of us in the scene, the harder it is for everybody else to wrangle us. But there is this wonderful moment, oh, there's the dog now, where, like, Tara and the dog kind of share a little look, and he's kind of looking from her to Sean. That's just like, just such gold, isn't it? Like, oh, we must get the dog's coverage from every angle. Oh, thank God you did, because it really works. And then this guy's just the most wonderful actor too, because I always think it's really difficult when you are coming into an established cast and, you know, you don't have very many lines, and it was freezing and nighttime. I thought he did such a brilliant job, because it's not an easy part to play the nosy neighbor, you know, like how suspicious are you trying to be? And was that a tough balance to strike? Like, because if he'd seemed too perturbed by it all, then we'd be like, oh, well, we know what's happening.
Yeah. Yes, it is a balance, and it's as you say, it's always tricky, because, you know, you can't all, you know, someone who's coming in just for a day or two has to very quickly get the lay of the land, and sometimes they really want to show everything in that short period of time, and so it's just a matter of him, you know, as soon as he saw all of you and got the measure of the show, it was fine. And also, you know, I think it was quite a simple, no, you know, the intentions of the scene were simple. It just had to be played as real as possible without, you know, going too overboard or anything.
Right. Yeah. I have to say, so right there, that little pan down to the blood on the shirt just there.
Yeah.
I looked at like 16 or 20 versions of the FX blood that we then put onto that, because you couldn't see it on, read it on camera. So we were like, we went back and forth on that loads, just like, how much is enough that the audience can maybe register it, but not actually really see it, because it can't look like some slaughterhouse film, right?
Yeah. You've got to
have like this so many times.
Gosh, those are the details that are just so wonderful, because I did an interview the other day about Suspicion, and they said, what's it like to be in something with a lot of VFX with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then no VFX with Suspicion? I was like, actually, Suspicion has got loads of VFX, CGI, you know, added things. So that's interesting, because I hadn't thought of that blood being added. But
The big one in this, and I think it was 76 shots in total, is that because we shot this first before we shot episode 4, Natalie's bullet hole in her sweater from where she gets shot in episode 4 wasn't on the sweater. So we had to go and track it in to every shot where you saw that bit of her sweater.
Stop!
So we put that little bullet scorch mark in through this entire episode.
Wow.
And you go, that's something that no one will notice. It'll just look like normal. The whole point.
And now anybody who watches this will, and they'll all look for where we did it poorly in a frame or two. And so you can send Lil all your comments. I don't want to hear them.
It's so funny how different people watch it, you know, because like I would watch it from an acting point of view, and you would watch it from that, you know, that one bit on her jumper.
But like, there it is, right there. See that there little black mark? The zipper there. That little thing is not there.
Oh, it's beautiful. It looks beautiful. It makes all the difference. So here's another very intense scene of, I feel like Georgina basically spent however long this took, a week or two, just in constant floods of tears, which is hard as an actor to maintain. But, and you know, we'll never know if she knew the safety was on or not. But how much did you think in terms of that in the direction, Stefan, of like how much of this is real? Do you just have to play the moment as she feels like it's totally real and let the audience decide the rest?
I think I wanted, you know, I can't remember, it wasn't quite written like this. And I always hate when someone puts a gun to their head and then doesn't pull it, because it feels like if you're going to put a gun to your head, it's just drama for drama's sake if you don't actually pull the trigger. Mm. So I liked the idea that she actually did pull the trigger, but that the lock, you know, the safety was on. So she was going to do it. So she had nothing, you know, you sort of at that moment realize she had nothing to lose at that moment. Obviously, at later dates, maybe she did. But so, you know, that was an intention. But actually, it was really hard. Again, a lot of thought went into it, because certain guns, if the safety's on, there's no travel in the trigger at all. And then also seeing that she moved it, you know, all those little things that you spend hours thinking about. How far can she actually pull it with the safety on? And will that be believable? And we obsess with all those minutiae.
And do you lead those things, Darren? Are you going, okay, so there's a scene with a gun. We need a gun expert, stunts there. We need, you know, obviously the director, that Stefan there. How do those decisions get built?
Well, I mean, it's all led by the script, and then the first AD will break it down normally, but each department submits their list of stuff, and then Steph and myself and the first will be talking about all the points in the schedule. We need various key personnel who aren't maybe with us every day, like a stunt or an armor and that sort of thing. But it's, you know, it is there in black and white on the page, so you kind of, it's everyone's job to pick up on that.
And it's difficult when you're shooting out of order, because then you go, well, you know, we need certain things, like the sweater, it can be on the page, but then you're like, oh, well.
And like the thing is, like, stuff like that, we didn't have that other bit planned yet when we really dove into this. So we couldn't, it was like we could have made a guess as to what it would look like, but then we'd have to be reverse engineering that whole scene based on where we decided to put a burn mark in a sweater for here, and possibly causing ourselves a whole bunch of other drama that was unintended. So it's like it's the lesser of two evils in the end. You know.
Well, and they're great. It's great that you make those decisions mostly from a creative point of view, you know, saying I'm going to let that scene be what it needs to be, and I'm going to fix the problem by CGIing a burn mark on a sweater so that we can, you know, do it, get to film it as creatively as possible, when it, you know, how it's meant, how it feels like it's meant to be, kind of a thing.
Oh, we just missed your gorgeous scene where you were talking about your daughter. Oh. I love that scene.
Well, that we should probably rewind.
That always brought a tear to my eye when I was editing.
Oh,
that's so lovely.
It was such, I love this episode because, like you say, with it being a bottle episode, you're kind of reliant in many ways on performance, right? And you're such a lovely director in that it feels very, you know, you're a really kind director and very encouraging. And I think, you know, there's pressure for an episode like this for actors, because you go, you know, I look at the script and be like, oh my gosh, wow, we've each got our own moment, and I want to be able to do this justice. And then, you know, the longer you're filming, the longer you're going, oh my gosh, these people are really good. I want to be able to do this moment justice. And I love that. I love that we all get to reveal a little bit. And then you go, as an audience, you're still able to question of going, well, is Tara just a good actress, or was that real? And because none of them, you know, they all need each other, but they don't trust each other, right? So I loved having that to do, and you were very good, because as much rehearsal as we had, when you're filming anything, you always kind of feel under the gun, you know, like there's always time is always kind of against you.
But Lil, so how do you go into it, right? So there's your moment. All of this is happening, right? And you're all revealing truths or part truths to each other.
Yeah.
And I assume you can only really play one intention really at a time. There's only so much layering you can do. So you're going in there, and how are you approaching, like, those moments where you're revealing part or holes, or you know, when you've read to the end and now you're rewinding to pretend that you don't know where you're going next.
Yeah. Well, funnily, because when we were reading this through, Stefan, our first rehearsals when we were just around that table in the old theatre, or where were we? That beautiful building. We were going, you know, reading through the script, and I think Stefan, you said something about intentions or something, and I was like, oh well, yeah, but this is my intention. You went, do you know how this show ends? And none of us did. So that was when you were like, okay, I think we need to know where we're going. So I did. So that's then when we, so was it, I feel like it was you, yeah. Right? Did you explain? You yes. were like, right, we need
yeah,
to.
I explained broad yeah, strokes.
Broad strokes. And we were all.
Rob, you need to come in after lunch. The gang need to talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. So, but having said that, even if you know where it's going, you have to just play that one intention, because otherwise it does get muddy and confusing. And the nice thing in that is that I think as long as I felt like I had no other choice but to reveal it, it would feel natural and authentic. And the way that you staged it, Stefan, and knowing that we just came from being upstairs with Natalie, who'd almost killed, would have died if it wasn't for just this freak kind of thing that being on the gun or whatever, like it felt like Tara in that moment had no choice but to reveal something. And you know, I think it's up for interpretation whether this is part of some kind of grand plan or whether she's genuine in that moment. But as Elizabeth, as Tara, you have to play it genuine. And I think we had that conversation, right, Stefan, where it was just you know, you
it
don't
has
wanna...
to be genuine. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to.
And a lot of it is about your daughter. So it is genuine. It's not, you know, and so I think, you know, there is a lot of truth in what you're saying.
Yeah.
But there's also not, you know, there's also fiction in there too. So.
Yeah. Well, and luckily at this point, I'd got scenes with my daughter. We'd filmed those. Some of those already, because sometimes when you're talking about something that's emotional, you don't really have a pinpoint to it. But then we had Anya, who played my daughter, and she's brilliant that
well.
Just the thought
so
of
good.
Somebody taking her, I was like, right, well, I'm in already floods of tears.
Yeah. Yes, there was that lovely scene. Oh no, not on this episode, but at the front door with her, and yeah, where she wants to leave with you. Yeah.
But again, all of that is like, so it's like 7 months later, right? So now she's grown like 2 inches, and it's
I know.
Mad.
And trying to keep the weather the same and in the same season, and just the logistics of it all. Now, where did you film this scene with him looking out of the window? Was that in the same house?
It was in the same building, just upstairs in a different room.
One of the bedrooms.
The other key thing, you know, that we always had to address was, because, you know, and you do anyway, but particularly with COVID, is trying to contain it within all within the same building. So that was a room that was dressed differently for him upstairs. And then all the views of his house were they were a different house, but one of the views of his window was actually the same house, just from a different angle. You know, so you sort of, you know, it's all cheating to sort of give the impression of next door neighbors without, you know, actually having the geography that worked.
Well, yeah, it's like his POV looking at the house was from like a scissor lift up at the top of the drive.
Oh, yes.
through a bit of window, right? And then when you
turn, you had a window frame on, like one of those things they use for, changing a light, a lamp on a street. It's called a scissor lift. And so you're in this little basket with a frame. And
oh my gosh.
Looking out of that, you know, with a curtain on it.
It's like when you're at a wedding and you kind of take an Instagram through a floating frame. That's just a...
Yeah.
That's so funny. Yeah. Do you think those, because in every shoot, there's always restrictions, right? There's always something that's, the house you wanted wasn't available on that weekend or whatever. But do you think that the extra restrictions due to COVID filming made you more creative in a way that was ended up being helpful, or was it just, you know, a bit not soul destroying, but was it like, do you think it helped or not? The extra.
I think there's always a degree with which restriction or compromise increase, you know, you choose something else and you get more excited about it. And certainly during the shooting of this, there were locations that fell through and I was gutted. And then we found something much better. We were going to shoot a huge sequence on a bridge in episode 4, was going to be in a swimming pool changing room. And then we couldn't do it there because of COVID. And suddenly we ended up on a bridge. And I felt it worked much better and was much more dramatic.
Wow, but then there are other times. That was one of my favorite scenes.
No,
that's so funny. But yeah, there were other times that then you really felt the loss. Were you going to say
where you
yeah.
just go, oh God, okay, yeah. we'll deal with it. It'll be fine, and you sort of get through it. And it's, you know, you always make the best of it, and you always try and put a positive spin on it, and often you get something better because you've done so much thinking about it, placing it in that location, that when you have to change it, you really know what's important, and maybe you approach it from a slightly different angle and you get something that actually answers more of the requirements of the scene, and so it works better for the scene.
Yeah, good analogy for life, isn't it? Just be like, well, how do we put a positive spin on this?
But also, you know, I was kind of at the spearhead, just on the ground doing it, whereas, poor old Darren was, you know, literally going, oh no, this is falling apart. I've got to give him some more options. We're shooting it on Tuesday. And he phones me up and goes, oh, there's been a slight problem with the thing. We've got the location manager looking for it. And I'm going, okay. And I can, and I know
what are you doing on Saturday?
At the other end, he's.
How do you keep that cool, Darren? Because I've never seen you, you know, just completely blow up, and there were definitely times where, you know, the pressure of the, I think we can look back now and go, well, it's fine because it all worked and everybody was safe, but how do you cope with that pressure, because it was extreme?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely challenging. I think that like most things, it's sort of like worrying about something doesn't fix it, and so freaking out about something doesn't fix it. Like, you're gonna have to get to the end of that reaction and then actually fix it. So if you can kind of try and just skip ahead and not engage with, you know, that side of it, because it doesn't do anything other than fluster everybody else around you, because they do kind of look at you to go, there is a way, you know.
Yeah.
That you just kind of have to take it with a pinch of salt and keep plodding on.
Yeah. Do you think that makes a good producer, kind of having that mindset of, you know, there's just
I think you have to, the British mentality is very well geared towards it. I mean, I'm like Chris, I'm a half and half. I grew up in, you know, Toronto and then moved to the UK, but it's that whole keep calm and carry on mentality does definitely kind of help, in knowing that no plan, no matter how good it is, survives first contact with the enemy. It's like things will always happen. But it is all in the planning. Like, the more we can plan, the more easily we can then deal with confidence with whatever comes up, because we know the rest of it is, for now at least, taken care of, right? Because we did that, we put in the work. And there's a great comfort in that, and a trust you put in your HODs and everybody else to rally around you. You know, I'm a firm believer in hiring nice people and hiring people that are way better at their jobs than I ever could be. So, you know, get them around you.
Yeah, and then delegate. Was there a lot of discussion? I know the answer to this, but I'm just going to put it to you, Stefan and Darren, about the, you know, now we can see, well, Natalie's kind of trying to get herself cleaned up. She's decided she's going to go with Sean. How were the discussions in terms of how much of a disguise are they in? Do we want them to look, you know, totally unrecognizable? How did you strike that balance between what was, you know, kind of plausible and then, you know, what would look cool?
I'm just going to say, first of all, Stefan, that this is where I went. Well, Chris and Stefan, over to you, because you're Americans alumni, and disguises are your
That's
bag.
It, exactly.
So I will take your lead on this.
So in the Americans, there were lots of hats, facial hair, glasses, and wigs. But in the Americans, they always had a little safe house where they could change, and they'd appear in the, you know, in their outfits. And a few times I shot them getting into the outfits or getting out of the outfits. But it's always sort of breaks the illusion a bit, because it's so complicated putting on a wig so that it looks good and getting the makeup right so it looks different. And so, you know, in this moment, I, Chris and I, and I'm sure Darren as well, we're all going, we want it to appear real. We don't want it to be too extreme, or where did they get that wig from, or how come, you know. So it was really, what could they find in the house, you know? So it's big baggy jumpers, bigger coats, hats that could roughly disguise them. And then use Chris's next episode to go, now they can go buy some stuff and they can actually do the next step of a deeper disguise. Because I think, you know, at one point it says they run out in disguise, and we're going, well, that's going to look like Scooby-Doo. It's like, you know, in a way, have they found disguises and glasses and everything? So I think it was just roughly change your, you know, head shape and body shape where we could, and then use a time jump to actually put on some better disguises for getting across the border.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I think it's one of those things of, like, we know who lives here. We know whose house this is. So the girls are going to have an especially tough time. And I think, like, the costume department did a great job of putting everybody in stuff that you would find in this place that belongs to this agent, you know. And it was like, okay, they're not going to get, like, a fancy frock, you know. Like, you're not going to get a woman's dress. Like, it's going to be country, rubber boots, barber jacket, you know, woolly cap. Like, that's what you're going to get in the closets here. So that's what you got to choose from.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we'd spent the last 6 months all trying to cut our own hair and realised, actually, it's a very difficult thing to do, and you can't just do it with kitchen scissors. One of the relationships I love about the show, and also about this episode, is between Ardesh and Eddie. And I feel like this scene is just so lovely between the two of them, because they're very different, but then somehow just kind of mesh really well together. Was this something you think of in casting Stefan, or you just kind of hope that they have good chemistry on the day and try and guide that?
I think when I read the Eddie character on the page, I was really nervous, because he's such an over-the-top character. And I just thought, anyone playing him, you know, I come from the school of, I want there to be a reality and a truth in every scene. And if someone's playing it up, then I sort of lose it. And so when we were auditioning and Tom did it, and I went, wow, he actually is being that character. He's not playing the character. Yeah. He is being the character. And so I went, oh God, now I can see what this character is, and I can see how it can be played and not feel unreal. And then also you can see a change when anything new is revealed about him later on in the series. You get a really big change from this slightly goofy guy to someone much more serious. So I thought, it'll be a really lovely reveal. And he was just, you know, sometimes I had to pull him back, you know, from doing stupid things. But then often, you know, I remember him flicking, we passed it, but him flicking the biscuit into his mouth. And,
you know,
those funny little moments that feel sort of funny but unforced. And here just pouring himself a drink. And but also, hopefully looking back, you can see him slightly manipulating the scene. If you know, this is actually a little manipulation of the scene, whereas it feels in the moment when you first watch it as a, I think, quite a genuine moment of, well, what are we going to do, and how we, you know, and again, yeah, a lot of rewriting and tweaking to dialogue to try and make it that balance between making it feel, you know, too on the nose or too subtle, and yeah, you're trying to find that balance.
Yeah. Was it helpful in hindsight to, well, I don't know if hindsight, but because with being able to tweak the script so much and have the payoff of moments that you'd kind of planted in episode 5 all the way in episodes 6, 7, 8, I'm just thinking, because when you were first going to do the show, you were just going to do episode 3 and 4?
3 and 4, yeah.
Yes.
Three and four, yeah.
So then with the, you know, with the lockdown, and then I guess, Darren, it was your kind of brainchild to say, right, let's just keep with our two directors that we know, you know, you and Chris Stefan work so well together. Was it nice then for you as a director to go, I'm going to be able to plant seeds now, and I'm still going to be around because I'm here forever to have the payoff further down the line? Was that kind of novel?
It was, I guess, you know, the whole process was quite novel. Block shooting 6 episodes with another director who, you know, luckily I love, and who, yeah, we see very much eye to eye, and we absolutely trust. And, you know, I shot scenes for him, he shot scenes for me. You know, it was sort of a very nice, easy relationship, and we could phone each other up on weekends and go, and moan or weep, you know, at changing things or tough moments. Yeah. So that was lovely. And it's all, you know, it's always nice to do more episodes in terms of you get more ownership and you get more into the characters, and so that's always fun. Often for me, the problem is being away from my family for too long, so I tend to not do that many episodes. I tend to do 1 or 2 tops, but
yeah, you got to plant some seeds at least and see yes, them grow.
Yes.
Yeah, because really once nice, we finished, yeah, once we finished this episode, because we could film it all in one location, then it would be like Stefan would do 3 days and Chris would come on and do 2 days, and then Stefan would come back. It was back and forth. So the rest of the series was all done, like, once we went into a location, we'd shoot anything that was shot there or in that general vicinity, and then we'd come back out. So it didn't matter, you know, which episode that was from.
So the
police set, the NCA set, you know, was one set, and I went in and shot it, then Chris went in and shot it, and, you know, it also meant that if I'd forgotten something, I'd have a bit of time to go, oh wait, can you grab me a quick close-up of this or that, or a moment, you know. So we were in there for a big period of time, and then
that's the shot from the center left right there. I was looking out through the curtains.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh, you would just never have known. It's so good to watch it knowing those things and going, oh, my gosh, yeah, I guess that could be shot like that. And now we get to see outside. And this is the actual outside of the house.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is lovely to then be able to not have to cheat that. And we get to see the violence of Sean and realize that, you know, we haven't just reformed, yes, this character, that he's, you know, he's still going to move, yeah, this story along. But it's why this episode was so special as an actor too, is that this was really, apart from 8, in a way that we shot a lot of that massive scenes at the end and, you know, all together, this was really the only episode, like you say, Darren, that we shot most of it concurrently. So then this moment here where we're walking away, getting in the car to go, it did feel like, as an actor, we'd been through something all together. Yeah. And, you know, the characters are obviously having gone through something, and then we're driving off to this, you know, to whatever the adventure holds. And when we were filming, it was like, oh my gosh, everybody's healthy and well, and these protocols work. Because, you know, we start up and every day there were notifications saying this film set's shut down, or this is now going down for 2 weeks. And, you know, you never really know with you saying being away from family, Stefan, you don't really know your end date when you're shooting. No. When we were shooting, you know, it was like, if we don't have any shutdowns, we're ending here. And, you know, it was constant readjusting. I know for you, Darren, schedule wise. So I remember this being a special moment.
So this again was shot in the studio, and this little shot through the back window was a combination of three shots, wasn't it? Shot on stage, a shot putting away from a car, and then this shot. So it was three different shots to go out the back window with to reveal Eddie doing something.
The pulling away from the car, was that wasn't shot in the same location as seeing the car go down that hill? That was a separate place?
So because we started on his face, that was shot somewhere else. That was in the studio, I want to say.
Right. We were in the back of the studio.
And then we were pulling out of the car, and then we were on the outside of a car. And then we were actually tying that all into that shot, the actual end shot of the scene. So it was three different pieces that were then morphed together to match.
It's essentially that his action inside the boot of the car is in the stage, and then there's pulling, and you start pulling back out, but then you obviously see that there's no back door or anything. So then you have to do pulling out of the static vehicle back door to show the back door, and then you do the
drive the car away. Amazing.
Yeah.
Inside info. Well, that's the end of the episode. Such a good episode. I could just watch it a million times. One way that I love to just end these, and, you know, it's not necessarily a simple question, but starting with you, Darren, what advice would you give to somebody if they feel like they may be production inclined or want to start producing? Like, I mean, I have no idea the answer to this, but where would you suggest they start?
Yeah, I think it is a tough one, because there's two sides to producing. There's the creative side and there's the logistical side. And I think that the people who are best at it have done a bit of both. Because they inform each other, and you know when one has to lead or, you know, the other. But, you know, you always want to try and, as much as you can, come from a place of the creative and the script, because without scripts, you've got nothing to produce anyway. So it is really, in our industry, just getting out there and getting some work, regardless of what it is, because then you get exposure to all the various departments that you need to know. And then technology is so readily available now, you know, like literally our phones are better equipped than studio cameras were a decade ago. Literally, you know, like the quality on your iPhone is better. So, you know, the other thing is always just get out there and just do it, really, honestly. It's like, just go for it, because that's when you make your mistakes when it's on an iPhone, and you'll make less of them when it's, you've got, you know, 350 people and a studio and everything else looking down your neck.
Yeah, so just like get a gaggle of friends together and...
Yeah, you know, I mean, the world is your oyster, right? And look, this episode especially is a really great example that actually, if you look at this, you know, the effects and everything else aside, the story is simply a small group of people in one place trying to find out the truth about their relationships to each other and their histories. Now, like that's just storytelling, you know? Yeah. So you don't need Marvel Studios or, you know, Apple behind you to write a story and find a location. Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Dad. It's like, just go and do it, right? Yeah. And because then you also, then it comes down to that planning as well. It's like, if you are making it and you're the producer and or the director of it, if it's you and you've got a good DOP with you and a good sound recorder, because nothing looks worse than a poorly sound recorded film, then the world's your oyster, right? Like, and everyone's just gotta start somewhere. But I do think that we learn best by doing in this industry. But Stefan is the indie the indie roots master. So I'll throw back to him, really.
What would be your answer?
I mean, definitely make a short film. And the key thing is write the script, show it to people, rewrite it, show it to more people, rewrite it. Don't just write something and go, this is brilliant. Because you'll think when you first write it, this is the best thing ever written. But as you show it to people, ideally people who you trust, or then you start seeing the holes in it, then you start really developing it. So you probably need to rewrite a short film, you know, 10 times in order to get something that you really then go out and shoot. So get that script right, try and give it, you know, some emotional scenes, try and give it a little sting in the tail, do something that makes it have a real proper beginning, middle and an end, and character, you know, and at least one interesting character in there, so that it, you know, you sort of try and make it something that people enjoy watching. And I certainly made a bunch of short films before I started making feature films and then moved into telly. And then the other thing is, if you know, everyone when I was coming up through the ranks went, if you keep going, you will succeed. It's just a matter of time, because all the people around you start getting into the industry and will start to hire you. And if you just keep at it, so it's really a matter of, you know, it took me a long time before I made my first feature, probably, you know, 8 years of just trying and doing short films and working on things and doing little documentaries and commercials and, you know, but it was a long old struggle to get in there and start making drama. So if you keep at it, you will get there eventually.
Yeah, that's such wonderful advice.
Yes. No, go ahead, Stefan.
No, I was also saying that our industry at the moment also has a huge shortfall of, you know, racially mixed people. You know, a lot of, you know, I chatted with some friends of my sons who were going, oh, but we don't have a chance of getting in. I go, no, actually, you do have a really good chance, and you shouldn't just give up because it's dominated by white people predominantly and white males predominantly. There's also huge opportunities for everyone to get involved, and they should really just follow their passion and not go, who am I, or just if you've got an interesting story to tell, or just tell it.
Yeah.
Well, and especially after lockdown, with a lack of content being made and everybody watching every last bit of every streaming service's catalog, it's like literally people turn on their devices and it says, sorry, you've completed, you know, everything. There's nothing left to watch. It's like, and so there is this big rush of need for more content. And so it's never been a better time to start the journey and to just go for it. But it's not going to be easy. Okay. And people just need to recognize that. Like, it will be long, it will be painful. And I think, you know, and you can't be precious. That's the big thing is, like when you write something, it's tough, just like, you know, when you're playing a character, because you're putting yourself out there. Okay. But then when you give it to people, if it's your script or your short film, it's like there's nothing worse than people just going, yeah, it's all right, it's good. Like you should strive to get the feedback, and you should try to not feel pained by people's comments, but to actually be really open to them, receptive to all of those different views, because it'll only make the material better. Where some people will be like, oh, they've told me it's horrible, I'm just going to throw it away. It's like, no, just take it and try and take a step back, take a breath. And then, and some of it you'll disregard, just like advice in the rest of your life. You'll be like, well, that doesn't work for me, but thanks for telling me. And others, you'll sit with it and you'll think it doesn't, but then you'll be like, oh, they have a point. Dang it.
Yeah. Often the more it hurts, the more true it is. Yeah.
That's it.
And the other thing,
you've got to embrace that pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other thing is, be nice to people. You know, the more, you know, I go, this industry, if you're nice to people, if you work with people, if you're collaborative, you will get into it eventually. It is hard, but you will, and you'll have a long career. If you're arrogant, if you're If you think you always know the right answers, if you have no humility, you might do very well on your first short film, but you won't have a career. You know, I think being nice and being collaborative and kind and compassionate and not blaming is really important.
That's brilliant advice. So, I mean, it feels like start, just get going. However, you know, however small it feels at the time or impossible, keep going. I'm so with you on that, that if you don't stop, you will get there. It may take you 10 times the length of time you felt like it might do. And then, you know, take the punches and... Yeah, there you go. Perfect. I think that's a great place to end it on. Darren and Stefan, thank you so much. This has been a brilliant conversation. I could chat to you forever, but I won't. Congratulations on a great episode and a great show. And thank you, everybody, for watching.
Oh, I hope you loved that. How brilliant. How brilliant. What good advice as well. There's a lot of construction happening just outside of this window. So sorry if you could hear that throughout. Hopefully you couldn't. Massive. Now there's beeping. Can you hear that? Massive thanks to Stefan and Darren. They're just so brilliant at what they do. And also, I think what really struck me was how much they care about the story and that it's the script that guides all of this, which is the same for me as an actor. And, you know, when you have everybody from every department, from the big producer at the top like Darren, all the way down to every single role within the production, if everybody cares about the script and cares about the story and telling this story, then you all work really well together as a team and everybody has the same goal, which feels good. And then, gosh, just the advice at the end, how brilliant. That just start, whatever it is, whether it's something to do with the film industry, whether it's something to do with the cooking industry, or, you know, like anything, whatever it is, whether it's becoming more comfortable with yourself, whether it's becoming a water skier, whatever it is, just starting is most of the battle. And then just don't stop. It feels so simple, but it's true, isn't it? And also to be able to take that criticism and welcome it, welcome the feedback, I think is also a really good thing, because I feel like I just assume that people at the top of their game, or you see them on TV, or you watch them in the Olympics or whatever, that they don't really have to deal with the rejection or the criticism. But of course they do. And you want to welcome that if you want to get better. And that's not easy to do. And when you care about something, it's painful. But as Darren said, like, you know, kind of let it sit with you and then keep going and be kind to each other. Well, I hope you're having a brilliant day. I hope people are being kind to you in your day and you're being kind to them. Thank you so much for being here. Stay tuned for episode 6 of the Watch Along Suspicion Edition. Thank you for being here. Thank you for watching. I hope you're loving it. And I will see you next time.